No, I think, you know, we, like everything, that one's done and gone with, and we're moving on to Philadelphia now.
I mean, just keep continuing doing what we're doing every week. You know, ain't shouldn't change a thing. You know, we've been winning with the same mentality, same thinking process, same everything. I mean, why change now?
You know, we had a meeting this morning. We did our lift and our run, and I kind of told them, you know, basically the same thing, that, you know, we can't make these mistakes in playoff games, and, you know, we'll be going home. So, you know, there's always good and always bad in some of the games, but we made some critical errors in that game that that didn't, you know, that could have got us beat.
No, let's put it behind us. Yeah, move on. Yeah, we're pretty much, we're done with that now. We watched the film, a lot of things that we can learn from, and now just on to Philadelphia.
You know, he was, at the time when we played him last year, he was pretty young quarterback, so, but we'll just try to figure out. They've got some great schemes. Some of the things they do are very, very tough to defend, and so we'll have to work on it. And I know they've got a great defense. I haven't started watching their defense yet, but you know, their front guys are really good. 27, the safety, I know he's a very good player, so we'll just have to start studying them up.
I mean, it's going to be a tough game. I mean, they have a great defense. We have a great defense. You know, people keep saying about Foles being a backup quarterback. You know, K-State started as the starting quarterback here, so it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be a game. I mean, there's no excuses to anything. You know, they're going to fight to try to win and get to the Super Bowl. We're going to try to do the same.
I think he's doing a lot better. He was actually the first one to greet me in the locker room after the game. I think, you know, it's really hard to say if they were, I don't know if they're trying to pick him or they just got tangled up. You know, he hit helmet to helmet, obviously. So, you know, I don't know the intent of it. We'll probably turn it in the league and see what they say.
Yeah, very impressive defense. They fly around. They're always in the right spot, and they have some really good players, Pro Bowl caliber players that can make it tough on us.
Three receivers right, Thiel in the left. Marshawn Lattimore, 12 yards from Adam. Case on a deep drop, steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side, caught by Diggs.
Stay up!
Oh, my God!
Loose. Oh, my God!
30!
No!
10!
Touchdown!
Are you kidding me?
Miracle finish!
It's a Minneapolis miracle!
No way!
Step on Diggs! And the Minnesota Vikings have walked off on the New Orleans Saints! It's a 61-yard Minneapolis miracle!
On to Philadelphia. Welcome into another edition of The Scoop here on KLGR, 1490 AM, FM 95.9. Seth Topol with you here. We got a lot to get to on today's show. John Folkey will join us. Drew Mahold of Vikings Territory will join us as well as we continue to get you ready to go for Vikings-Eagles NFC Championship football coming up on Sunday. Let's start it off by taking a look at our top sports headlines here for today. Taking a look at our top sports headlines for today, the Minnesota Timberwolves in action last night. Some frustrations boiled over for the Magic, and they end up getting the win by a score of 108-102. Nemanja Bjelica ejected after trying to stop Aaron Aflalo from taking his head off. Both players ejected after receiving technical fouls earlier in the game, and the Wolves just could not hold the lead. They fall to 29-17 on the season. Their Eastern Conference woes continue. Some big news in Pittsburgh as the Pittsburgh Steelers shake up their coaching staff after a big loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars in the divisional round of the playoffs. Todd Haley out as offensive coordinator. Haley had his contract end with Pittsburgh. They made no effort to renew or extend him. So Todd Haley now free to the rest of the NFL for some potential offensive coordinator openings. Big hint, the Vikings have one that is open, so maybe that would be a fit. for the Vikings to replace Pat Shurmur. Andrew Sendejo still progressing his way through the concussion protocol. The injury report today had him as a limited participant in practice, which is certainly good news for his participation. But a different name that was not expected on the injury report, Adam Thielen, dealing with a back injury, so he did not practice today. Hopefully just precautionary, though, on that level. And the NBA still looking into a bizarre scene involving the Los Angeles Clippers and the Houston Rockets, in which Rockets players, led by former Clipper Chris Paul, went into the Clippers locker room to try to pick a fight with Austin Rivers. Still no details on potential discipline, but we will have to see how that plays out here the rest of the week. And that is a look at our top sports headlines here for today. We are going to talk about that Timberwolves Magic game from last night, plus we'll ask John Fokey where he was for the Minneapolis Miracle. All of that and much more coming up on The Scoop after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Miss today's episode of The Scoop? Find each and every episode on myklgr.com under the Sports tab.
And we're joined today on The Scoop by John Fokey of the Timberwolves Radio Network. John, thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you again, Seth.
Let's start off by looking at the Timberwolves aspect of what has been dubbed the Minneapolis Miracle from Sunday night. The Timberwolves were playing the Portland Trail Blazers at home, and the Vikings game was wrapping up right around shoot-around. I know they had the game on the big screen at the Target Center, and the final score came, and it seemed like the crowd had a pretty good reaction to it. John, just give me a sense of the mood around Target Center after the Vikings were able to complete that thrilling win.
Yeah, it was a super cool moment. I was already up in our Skyway studio getting ready to do the pregame show, and I was joined by Steve Thompson from our flagship station. And so we were going on the air at 7:30, and he was going on from our Skyway studio a little after 7 to wrap up his portion on our flagship. And so we were up there watching it, and, you know, a number of fans had already come into the Target Center and were watching it on the center hung inside. But there were some fans that didn't want to miss it. And so we had it in the TVs, up on the TVs in the Skyway studio. And then above the doors before you entered the arena staff had put the game up there. So there were a number of people out in the Skyway just standing around watching it. And when it happened, both Steve and I turned to each other and said, you know, are you serious? Like, that really happened? And the crowd out in the Skyway just went nuts, and Alan had the video of the crowd in the arena going nuts as well. It was just a real, real cool and surreal type moment. And I think Alan summed it up best on the broadcast that, you know, before that happened, the mood in the arena from, you know, the 600 to 800 fans that were already there, the arena staff, obviously, you know, employees, everybody was pretty bummed out, you know, to see that lead slip away and started feeling that sort of Minnesota, you know, I don't know, morass or whatever the word would be, that, you know, here we go again. And when Diggs made the catch and run and 61 yards later he's in the end zone, the mood completely changed. And it was, you know, night and day. And then it was fun, too, being in the Skyway studio for the next 45 minutes and watching fans come in. You know, we saw fans that were coming from U.S. Bank Stadium into Target Center, and fans, you know, with Jimmy Butler, Carl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins jerseys over Vikings jerseys. So it was real fun, and that mood really changed. And then the Wolves, you know, were able to sweep the five-game homestand and really kind of put an exclamation point on a big day in Minnesota sports. And so, you know, for a few moments, all was right in the Minnesota sporting landscape.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that the finish to that homestand. The Wolves did end up going on to beat the Trailblazers Sunday night, 120-103. They finish off the homestand 5-0, and that includes wins against the Cavaliers, the Thunder. They beat the Pelicans, and they beat the Trailblazers and the Knicks as well. In terms of moments this season, John, where does that five-game sweep of that homestand rank amongst some of the best moments the Wolves have had this year?
Well, I think it's right up there when you look at the competition and the fact that they won those games by an average of nearly 18 points per contest. And, you know, of those five teams, four of them would be playoff teams if it started right now. And the Wolves, you know, just put together dominating performances on both ends of the floor, from the way their offense was clicking to the way their defense in the New Orleans and Cleveland games, you know, set the tone right from the jump. And then in the New York and OKC games, came up big in the second half and allowed Minnesota to create some separation. You know, and then in that Portland game, it was the second quarter in which the Wolves held the Blazers to just 10 points on 2 of 15 shooting. So there were a number of, you know, great moments on that homestand. But, you know, I think what's interesting is the Wolves were climbing in the standings and everybody was feeling really good. And then last night, the loss in Orlando against a team that had dropped 16 out of 17. And so it just goes back to really reinforce Coach Tibbs' message that, you know, you've got to handle every single game the same way, and you've got to focus on, you know, the improvement, on the preparation, all those things that we hear him say day in and day out. And, you know, coming off the five-game sweep and feeling good about yourself, I thought that, you know, that loss to Orlando was unfortunate, but it just reinforces that message of, hey, you can't look ahead to Toronto or Houston. You've got to stay focused right where you are.
John, some strange things going on in that game against the Magic last night. In there was a scuffle between Nemanja Bjelica and Aaron Aflalo. And I know I saw the missed punch that that kind of led to both players being ejected, but it sounds like things were brewing a little bit earlier in the game. What happened between those two?
Well, there was a scuffle earlier in which Aflalo went up against Belly, you know, trying to score a layup, and Belly defended it well. They collided, and they ended up having some words after that. And then a couple plays later, you know, Belly was running in, kind of had the elbow up a little bit as he was going in to get an offensive rebound, and Aflalo just turned to face guard him, you know, and put his elbows up and slammed right into Belly's chest, and then the two kind of got tangled up a little bit, and that's what Aflalo threw that haymaker. And, you know, thank God Belly moved out of the way, because I was talking to my wife when I got home, and you just think about how bad that could have been had that connected. I mean, it wasn't a great situation overall, but had that punch connected, I would hate to think about what could have transpired after that. So, you know, fortunate for Belly to have gotten out of the way. And, you know, I think Aflalo is going to end up with a suspension for sure, a fine for sure. And, you know, Belly got ejected only because it was his second technical. And, you know, we've had a lot of folks on Twitter wondering why, when Belly was trying to defend himself and, you know, hold Aflalo in the headlock like that, that he was the one that got tossed. Well, in that earlier scuffle that I was talking about, they both got hit with double technicals. And then they both got hit with double technicals again for the second scuffle. And so as that resulted in the second technical for Belly, it's an automatic ejection. So it's something that the refs do. You know, it's a default that if two guys are involved in something, you just give them double technicals and move on. Certainly I don't think Belly deserved to be ejected for, you know, trying to protect himself, but just kind of the way things went.
John, we look at what's coming up next for the Wolves. They will take on the Houston Rockets on Thursday, and it could be a different-looking Rockets team depending on what happens with what they did to the Clippers.
Wild, man. I mean, what's going on?
I have never seen anything like that, and still kind of trying to gather all the info as to what happened, but basically a scuffle between the Clippers and the Rockets led to Chris Paul leading a group of Rockets players through a back door to get into the Clippers locker room, while Clint Capella was kind of a decoy at the main door to the locker room. I don't know if I've ever heard of anything like that happening before.
No, it's new to me as well. But, you know, it's been a weird kind of season in the NBA, just in terms of the anger level and the angst level. I mean, we've seen LeBron James get ejected, Kevin Durant get ejected multiple times, Anthony Davis's first career ejection, and you know, how many times have we woke up the next morning and seen an email from the league saying, you know, so-and-so was fined X amount of dollars for criticizing the officials. So there seems to be a lot of tension in the league right now on the court between the players and the officials. We see a lot of jawing back and forth. And, you know, it seems to have come to a head here over these last couple of days. And, you know, hopefully it's something that everybody can get together and sort out and just get back to playing basketball, and so we don't have to worry about this stuff. But you're right. It'll be very interesting to see if the NBA's investigation of that Rockets-Clippers situation wraps up, you know, before that game on Thursday, and then who's in uniform and who's not. And as more details creep out, you know, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN has been on the case right from the jump, and so he's probably your best source. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see who's in the lineup and who's out. And you know, the crazy thing is those names that you mentioned, Chris Paul, James Harden, Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, those are huge pieces of that Rockets team. And so if they're not there on Thursday, that's going to put a lot of pressure on some other guys to step up. And you know, you're talking about two of your main ball handlers, and I know Harden's been out for the last 2 weeks with a hamstring injury, but they were kind of targeting his return either Thursday or Saturday. So to be without him, possibly because of the injury or a suspension of some sort, that puts a lot of pressure on that Rockets team.
We see some other tough games coming up here in the next few. The Wolves will see the Clippers on Monday. They'll also be home to take on the Toronto Raptors on Saturday. And coming into the season, Toronto was viewed as maybe one of those teams that might be able to rise up in the Eastern Conference. But I don't think anybody expected them to be playing this well.
Yeah, they've been interesting to watch, and they've really changed their style of play, which I think, you know, suits the way the game is being played across the association now. And they're shying much further away from the isolation mid-range game, and they've gotten more into that kind of pace and space style that we see, you know, kind of dominating the NBA landscape. And it's resulted in a 29-13 record for them. And DeMar DeRozan poured in 52 in setting a Toronto Raptors record, franchise record earlier this year. So he and Kyle Lowry are still kind of the backbone of that team, but they're going about things a different way. Their assists are up a little bit more. Those guys are shooting more threes rather than, you know, the dreaded mid-range shots. And so they've got some offensive firepower, and they're going to test Minnesota just like Houston is. And then, you know, you look ahead to next week, and you've got the L.A. Clippers, who are playing at a high level right now. I mean, they're 8-2 in their last 10 games. They won 5 straight. Minnesota will be at Staples Center, and then a back-to-back with Portland and Golden State. So a very big gauntlet of a stretch coming up here for Minnesota over the next week. And, you know, hopefully they can bounce back from this Orlando loss, figure things out, and get back to playing like we saw them do at home.
John, want to take a little bit of time here as we start to wrap up to give you some recognition. The NSMA Sports Media has named you the 2017 Minnesota Sportscaster of the Year. So congratulations, a very well-deserved honor.
Yeah, thank you. It was a surprise and incredible, incredibly humbling to be, you know, first off, just nominated and, you know, to be amongst guys like Dan Barrera of KFAN and Corey Provis, who are also finalists for the honor this year. And to be able to, you know, end up winning it was amazing. So, you know, a huge thank you to everybody who voted, everybody who is part of the organization and voted and nominated me to begin with. And, you know, it's just great to be able to shine the light kind of on what we do in covering, you know, the WNBA and the Minnesota Lynx, but also, you know, our work with the Timberwolves and the Timberwolves Radio Network and connecting with folks like you, Seth, and stations all over the upper Midwest to talk Timberwolves basketball and spread the word. So incredible honor, incredibly humbling to win that, and, you know, just very fortunate to have that opportunity.
John, great stuff here today. Thank you for joining us to talk about just how the Wolves have been doing recently and some of the other crazy things going on around the NBA. We'll see if the Wolves can keep their strong stretch going, and we'll catch up with you again a little bit later on down the road.
Awesome. Sounds good. Take care, Seth.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9 is radio you can depend on for sports and play-by-play.
Touchdown!
This is the Purple Pillage with Neil Roberts and Lee Fockin. The Pillage starts now.
And welcome to another edition of the Purple Pillage Playoff Edition, brought to you by Four Bears Casino and Lodge, located 4 miles west of Newtown, North Dakota. The Vikings are going to the divisional championship, and Neil, we can't believe it. I think nobody can believe it. What is now dubbed the Minneapolis Miracle.
Yeah, you know, Leaf, growing up as a Viking fan, Twins fan, Minnesota fan in general, these plays seem to go against you. You know, you got the Drew Pearson play and the Blair Walsh play, and I mean, the Twins won a couple world titles, granted. When it comes to the Vikings, Timberwolves, some of the other sports have floundered and have never won a world championship. It always seems like some plays or games you get beat on, but sometimes that play that lives in infamy. For once, we have one that we're on the plus side of. And that doesn't happen very often as a Minnesota fan. I would have rather we had won by a couple touchdowns. We had that comfortable lead and not have a heart attack. Like you mentioned, what a way to end it. What a memory that our grandkids are going to be watching. That's going to be there forever. A cool way to advance the NFC championship for sure.
Let's back up and kind of relive the game with everybody. You go into halftime 17-0. Vikings are feeling good. They go into their locker room. It just goes to show that the Saints got a little fire in their belly and decided, no, this isn't where it ends. We're down by 17 and we're coming back, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and you could tell early on that the Vikings played it well. They didn't seemingly worry about the clock. The play call wasn't very well executed, but coming off that first New Orleans touchdown, Keenum throws the pick right away. I want him to throw the ball. I mean, you can't sit on this thing. Drew Brees can put up 5 touchdowns yet on you. A 17-7 lead is nothing with quarter and a half to go yet. We have to move the ball and we have to score. And the Vikings tried to do that, but they were just coming up empty. And momentum shifted and you could feel it. And it's not a great feeling as a Viking fan or whatever team you're cheering for when the momentum shifts against a Hall of Fame quarterback like Drew Brees. The Vikings shut him down and confused the Saints offense the first half. The second half, he figured it out. The Vikings defense then, we're still trying to make the adjustments, but a couple long drives, it was not a good scenario going down the stretch. We're going to need a big play. I was hoping it would be that 4th-and-10 play where they completed it to Willie Snead. That was our big chance to seal that game. Willie Snead makes a big reception from Brees and they kick the field goal, and all of a sudden the Saints are up with 25 seconds to go. Vikings teams over the years, not historically known as great clock managers. I was really hoping that they could stuff that 3rd-and-1 play with like 30 seconds to go, force a field goal, and at least salvage a little bit of clock. Lutz comes on and drills the field goal down the middle, leaving us with 25 seconds. But even at that, we're 2 pass plays, 20 yards each, 40 yards from getting in field goal range. And Forbath had just kicked a 53-yarder. So you know if we get down inside the 35-yard line, we've got a shot. I thought this thing isn't at a loss yet. We still have a timeout. We can still have time to spike a ball. The drive didn't go that way. As a result, we needed the miracle play, and we got it. And Diggs did come down in time to kick a field goal, and we were in field goal range. I was not at the game. I was watching on television, as most of us were. Williams comes up, and he undercuts the corner that had a chance to maybe tackle Diggs, and all the stars aligned for a change.
Well, let's move on and talk about our player of the game, brought to you by Four Bears Casino and Lodge. No doubt about it, Neil, Stephon Diggs has to be your player of the game with the amazing catch, the Minneapolis Miracle. To have the smarts, we've talked about how you practice that play and you run out of bounds. But to have the brains to look downfield, see nobody's there, and be able to go on into the end zone, time expires in that process, that's huge.
Yeah, you nailed it, Leaf. They're conditioned. Well, Zimmer talked about, we run that play all the time. You know, you catch the ball and you get out of bounds. A situation we have no timeout left in your dire straits. Now, a lot of national media have paid a lot of attention. Yeah, in New Orleans, definitely blew that play. There's no way that should have happened. All that being said, still what a play by Diggs. You mentioned a couple of things that he did really well. First of all, I have to go up and secure the ball, and that's not easy in a crowd. And then he had shifted his body as that D-back came in and kind of grazed him or missed him totally as Williams went by him right before he caught the ball. And to come down and keep your feet without your knee touching and to stay in bounds and realize that the other safeties on the far side of the field double covering Thielen and was not there and that you had clear sailing to the end zone, all that happens, bang, bang, bang. I mean, I wouldn't have blamed him if he'd have ran out of bounds right away. That's what you're conditioned to do and you want to make sure that you get a chance at that field goal. But we were talking also that as Viking fans, we do not want to come down to a field goal kick. I don't care that Forbath had just nailed a 53-yarder. I don't even want him on there for a 27-yarder and relive the Blair Walsh thing. All that being said, kudos to Stephon Diggs and for Keenum. You know, you watch that throw, and Keenum gets a lot of air under the ball typically, and he doesn't have the strongest arm in the league, but he's pretty accurate. Well, on this one, when you watch that back again, I mean, he throws essentially, what, a 30-yard out pattern, which is a hard NFL throw to make. Not a lot of air under that leaf. I mean, he throws that thing on a line, and that really set everything up to go boom, boom, and allow that play to unfold as it did. So kudos to Keenum. That was a heck of a throw and a heck of a catch. As a result, we're going to Philadelphia.
Stephon Diggs, your player of the week. Check out the play if you haven't seen it yet. Can't believe you haven't. Minneapolis Miracle. It's everywhere on the internet, thanks to Four Bears Casino on the player of the week. As you said, Neil, we're off to Philadelphia. We predicted a few weeks ago that we wouldn't be in Philadelphia, but now we're going there. Eagles come out victorious. The plan here is to go to Philadelphia and win, which I think the Vikings can do, but a tough Eagles defense they have to face. They have to face the tough Vikings defense also.
Yeah, it's not fair to Philadelphia, and I guess on our end too. I mean, I wasn't looking past them. I just thought that Atlanta's playing pretty well. Julio Jones has come alive. Atlanta's got a pretty good defense as well, and I just thought that Atlanta might win that one in a pretty tight game, and I just didn't think Philadelphia would win that game. They're very well coached, and you mentioned they have a very, very good defense and a fast defense. Foles, similar to Keenum, might not be a Hall of Fame quarterback, but when they're on, they can move the ball, and when they make some mistakes, they make some mistakes as well. They also have a pretty good running game with Ajayi coming in, and they have a stable of backs. I predict low scoring game. I think the Vikes do win it in a tight one, Leaf, but I don't think the Vikes are going to blow them out. Their defense is too good. They have home field advantage. The Eagles can put some points on the board, but I think the Vikings defense is just too strong and will take the crowd out of the game and make it possible for the Vikings to get out of there with a win.
On the AFC side, it's the Jaguars versus the Patriots. On the NFC, the Eagles versus the Vikings. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Purple Pillage, brought to you by Four Bears Casino and Lodge. Check out their website, fourbears.com. For Neil Roberts, I'm Leif Bakken, and until next time, Pillage on!
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. For the latest scores, play-by-play, schedules, and more, visit myklgr.com.
Joined on The Scoop today by Drew Mahold of Vikings Territory. Drew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Seth, for having me on.
We've got to start by talking about the Minneapolis Miracle, as it's been dubbed, the unforgettable. I don't know if there's a person in the state of Minnesota or much less in the United States, for that matter, that hasn't seen the final play. Stephon Diggs, with a catch, manages to stay in bounds on the sidelines and runs into the end zone after a couple of Saints defenders run into each other, and the rest is, as they say, history. And it's one of those "where were you" moments. So I think it's only appropriate, Drew, that I start by having us kind of take us through what you were feeling at that point in the game on Sunday.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had kind of started to come to grips with the season, especially after the Saints had gotten that 4th-and-10 conversion on the previous series, and I was kind of when I was like, all right, well, this happened again. It's time to kind of come to grips with the season and the things that, you know, the success of the team did have that we kind of didn't expect. And then you see Case Keenum rifle that pass down the sideline. And when the ball was caught, I said, all right, we'll get out of bounds. We could maybe try a field goal. And, you know, like you had mentioned, you saw Diggs kind of creep up the sideline there. He saw that safety, Marcus Williams, you know, fly past him. And Diggs immediately recognized that and went down the sideline for a touchdown. Then I completely went numb. I was numb for about 5 minutes there. I just didn't know what to think, what to react with. It was unbelievable. It, like you said, one of those things that I will never forget where I was. And I'm still speechless. You can tell. I'm still trying to find the words to really describe what the feeling is. I just hope the Vikings, now moving on, can kind of have come to grips with it and are moving on faster than I am anyway.
Yeah, we got a big one coming up this weekend against the Eagles. We'll talk about that a little bit more in just a bit. But this entire play, this entire series set up by the fact that the Vikings had a 17-point lead, and then just like mm-hmm. that, it was gone. Drew Brees came in the second half and put together, well, I said the same thing with A.J. Mansoor yesterday, put together one of the best displays of quarterbacking I think I've ever seen. It was reminiscent of Tom Brady against the Falcons in the Super Bowl last year, where no matter what you're doing, it just seems like he found a way to beat it. So a lot of people, though, are still kind of getting on the defense for allowing them to be in that position. Do you think it's more of the lack of plays made by the defense in the second half, or is it simply a Hall of Fame quarterback getting hot and just putting on a display?
Well, it's going to be both in every one of these situations. I mean, Drew Brees, obviously, I think both the touchdown, the first touchdown to Thomas, and then the touchdown to Alvin Kamara over Kendricks, both of those are really, you know, unguardable throws and catches. Like I've always said, there's no defense for a perfect throw and perfect catch on a perfect route. So I think that's kind of what those plays told me. But, I mean, when you had the blocked punt, you had the interception, those obviously helped the Saints a lot. But, you know, Mike Zimmer and I think some of the coaching staff after the game did mention that, you know, they couldn't go into their double-A gap look package with Drew Brees because he's seen it all already. He has played against Carolina. And he's seen all these looks before that, you know, it's impossible to disguise it against him. And so Zimmer didn't do a whole lot of that against the Saints. And instead, he just kind of went to basic, you know, two-man defense. And when the pass rush doesn't get home in those situations, it lets Brees kind of sit in the pocket and pick things apart, and that's what happened. So, you know, obviously a lot of it has to do with Drew Brees and that talented offense and them just making plays. But I think Mike Zimmer got a little bit scared of Brees and was a little bit scared to blitz and, you know, really kind of show what his defensive packages are. I also think that kind of contributed to that comeback as well.
How important was it for this defense, regardless of what Kamara was able to do, mostly through the screen game, how important was it for them to basically completely neutralize Mark Ingram and make the Saints become one-dimensional?
Yeah, that was the driving force of that first half was the ability of the defense to stop the run. And, you know, over the past few weeks, Ingram and Kamara hadn't been terribly successful on the ground, and the Saints had still kind of found a way to be, you know, a potent offense. But with any offense that you face, it's very important to stop the run and make them one-dimensional, regardless if your quarterback is Tom Brady or Nick Foles. And I think moving forward to this week, even more so now, stopping the run will be important. But, Mark Ingram was completely shut out of that game. Kamara did do some damage in the passing game. But, you know, I think I trust, like, you know, I trust this secondary against any other team in the league at this point to hold teams in check if that running game is shut down the way it has been all season long for this defense. So absolutely a big deal for that defense to shut down Mark Ingram, shut down Alvin Kamara on the ground, forced Drew Brees to pass, and, you know, again, to his credit, that's what the Saints did. They threw the ball on the Vikings defense, and they were able to make that work. I just don't think many other teams in this league, especially a Nick Foles offense, is going to be able to do that.
Quite the game for Xavier Rhodes. He had the touchdown that he gave up
to Michael Thomas after Andrew Sendejo was knocked out of the game on a pick play. And we saw, I think, some interesting things from Rhodes. And not only did he seem to kind of get caught up in the moment, but also you see a guy who is so fierily defending his teammate. What sort of a maturation process did we see from Rhodes to be able to come back from that and then on one of the pivotal series late in the game be able to single-handedly shut the Saints down on three consecutive plays?
Yeah, I think people are forgetting about how well Rhodes recovered from that. I think they, you know, when he and Thomas were matched up on that last series for the Saints, you know, kudos to Zimmer for sticking with Rhodes on Thomas, but you know, they went after Rhodes over and over, and he shut it down completely, and they forced Brees to look elsewhere, which he ended up doing on that fourth down. But, you know, I think we've kind of been waiting for Rhodes to get, you know, a little bit more of an emotional edge. We saw it a little bit against Odell Beckham Jr., but that was overshadowed by Odell Beckham's emotional immaturity. And so Rhodes has kind of, he's becoming a leader, and I think it's just he's learning how to do it. He's kind of entering his prime here now where it's going to be important to keep those things in check and know when to, you know, be vocal, be emotional, and kind of try and, you know, have that edge, but also know when to keep it in check. And I think he just got a little bit overboard there a little bit. But kudos to him for, you know, overcoming it and correcting it and then locking down Thomas when it really mattered. So I think that's the thing I took away from this, is that he's going to learn now that, you know, sometimes things happen in games. Sometimes guys get knocked out. It's a physical sport. But at the end, you know, you should, I mean, I think he took it as motivation for himself to lock down Thomas. It just took him a little bit longer for him to do that.
Another tale of Jarius Wright in the game Sunday, too, was you figured that Marshon Lattimore was going to lock somebody down. And I don't know if he necessarily locked down Adam Thielen. Thielen, I think, had something like 70 yards on six catches. Mm-hmm. But we see Jarius Wright not going to be a guy who has a lot of catches on a weekly basis, but he seems to make the biggest catches of the game. And again, he had some huge moments in that game Sunday and some big drive-extending plays that we've just seemed to come to expect from him.
Yeah, this is what Jarius Wright has done his entire career. It's not terribly surprising to me, but I will say that I did not think he was going to make the roster back in August, so I should probably own up to that one. I missed on that one, but you know, he's the most reliable receiver on this team on third down. He gets it done. He moves the chain. This is not anything new, and I think it's telling now that, you know, I think Treadwell played like 14 snaps in this game, and Wright was close to 40. I think what this team is starting to recognize is that, you know, Jarius Wright as a third down guy in the slot might be a better option than having Treadwell on the outside and then Thielen or Diggs in the slot. So I think that's something to look forward to against Philly. But, you know, it's, again, this isn't terribly surprising for anybody, really. It's just he's not the big physical guy that can go outside, and that's kind of what limited him, and I think that's why he's been overlooked, is just because he's mainly a slot guy, and that's about it. But when he's on the field, he gets the job done.
One final thought on the Minneapolis Miracle. Case Keenum, man, what a game up and down. He starts off, it seems like he's a little bit nervous, but then he has that interception that just, first thing that I thought of when he threw that pick was that's the game. But then he's able to stay the course and rally back and put the team in position to win the game, which they did. He seems like a guy that just is unflappable, regardless of if he throws two picks, no picks, one pick. He just doesn't seem like he lets any of that get to him and just is able to keep the team in it and make some huge plays. And I think back to the John Gruden QB camp that's been circulating on Twitter. Yeah. That Gruden said, someone's going to give you a chance, and I think we're seeing that with the Vikings, that they've given him a chance, and we're seeing a guy who I think can certainly succeed in this league.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I think he's a gunslinger, I think, by trade, and by, you know, that's just the way he plays the game, and he took a risk there at that interception. That's kind of what you get with Case Keenum, the good and the bad, with those risks. You see it now the past couple weeks with these some of these pass interference calls and whatever. He might not be the most accurate guy down the field, but he's going to take those risks, give his guys a chance to make a play, and give his guys a chance also to draw pass interference. I think that's what he was trying to do with that Diggs play, because he saw the cornerback bite a little bit on a fake, and then he just kind of locked it, you know, a little bit too much air under the ball. But that's what you get with Case Keenum. You get, you know, you're going to get some really, really good plays out of that, some really bad ones. And I think a really good one that did come of that was the deep play to Diggs, because they've talked about before that, you know, Buffalo right seven heaven was that play call. And they ran that exact play two plays before that, and it was designed to go to Jarius Wright. And he slipped on the route, and it was incomplete. Case Keenum then recognized in that situation, I have to release this ball down the field to give myself or my team a chance for a field goal, and he put it in the perfect spot for Diggs. So, he didn't play a perfect game. He didn't play, you know, it was probably, for his standards throughout the season, probably an average game. He took a couple dumb sacks, missed a few opportunities, but, he made some really, really good plays when it mattered. The throw to Thielen, where he made that miraculous catch on Lattimore, the throw to Jarius Wright on that deep fade was just perfect, and then obviously the play to Diggs, too. So you got to give credit where it's due. Case responded very, very well after that ugly interception. And I'm not terribly concerned about him against the Eagles. I am concerned a little bit, though, with, you know, because it's going to be somewhat cold at night there in the 40s, but I think you have to, you know, trust what he can do and have to take something good at least away from that performance down the stretch after the interception, because he responded well, in my opinion.
Taking a look at that matchup against the Eagles, and what we're going to do is we're going to go through biggest key on offense and biggest key on defense. Let's start off on the defensive side of the ball. What is the biggest key for the Vikings defense to be successful against this Eagles offense, which we've seen just shred people throughout the regular season? They lose Carson Wentz. They go to Nick Foles. And now it seems like they're really having to try to grind things out against some of these previous opponents. They won 15-10 against Atlanta in the first playoff game that they had. So what do you think is the biggest key for the Vikings defense in order to be successful?
Yeah, I mean, at first you got to stop the run, stop Jay Ajayi, and stop LeGarrette Blount. Those two guys that's a pretty darn good duo of running backs in the running game there in Philly. But then I think it was today's press conference or some presser, Everson Griffin said it himself. He said, we're going to make Nick Foles beat us, which means, you know, that means I assume for Mike Zimmer will be the return of his double A gap package, bringing in disguises, bringing in blitzes that Nick Foles won't be able to diagnose like Drew Brees can. And from there, you're making Nick Foles throw the ball down the field, get the ball out quick to guys that he, you know, wouldn't want to get the ball to that quickly. And then, you know, I looked at Nick Foles' pass chart from the Falcons game. He attempted 7 total passes past 10 yards. 2 of them he got relatively lucky deep PI calls that probably shouldn't have been called. And then he had 3 completions in total that were past 10 yards down the field. So it's going to be a very congested passing game. They're not going to look deep down the field. They don't trust him there. And his passer rating also when pressured this season is just horribly low. So I think what you do is you get after him. You bring in these disguised blitzes. You bring in that double A gap look. And I think you'll have some success against Foles as long as that running game is kept contained. Because if they can go play action, get Foles out of the pocket and moving around, then I think that the Eagles can have some success.
On the offensive side of the ball for the Vikings, they will obviously have their hands full with that front 7 for the Eagles. But what is one of the biggest keys for the Vikings offense to sustain some success against the Eagles?
Yeah, I think for the Vikings, you got to, I mean, this is true, again, this is a kind of a cliche thing, but I think it's more true even now, is to avoid, you know, second and long. And I think that kind of falls on Pat Shurmur to, you know, mix it up a little bit on first down. He seems to lately have gone run heavy on first down. And, I mean, McKinnon and Murray combined, I think they're both under 4 yards to carry this season. So while, you know, they have been gaining a lot of aggregate yards, a lot of it is because they've been running the ball a lot. They've been ahead in games. They've gotten these chunk yards in games, but they need to be more efficient there, and they need to be more efficient on first down. Whether that does mean running the ball more effectively or it means mixing it up a little bit with your play calling, but then creating then, you know, your 3rd and 3s, your 3rd and 2s instead of your 3rd and 8s, and then I really think one of the receivers, either Diggs or Thielen, is going to have to win against both cornerbacks in Philly. You know, Ronald Darby, Jalen Mills, Patrick Robinson, that's a very, very good trio. And they proved it against Julio last week, held him in check. Ronald Darby had a fantastic game against Julio, especially when it mattered, shut him down. So big test for those receivers. And if they can win, and if Keenum can give them a, you know, the ball for a big play or two in this game, that might be the difference. But I think this is going to be a pretty low-scoring game. So it might just take, you know, two long touchdown drives for the Vikings in this game, something along those lines, and I think that could be enough.
I'm going to I have kind of floated around the 17-14 score as kind of a likely possibility. And after what happened Sunday, why not? I'm going to say that the Vikings win on a walk-off touchdown as time expires. Might as well make it 2 weeks in a row.
But, now that would be awesome.
Yeah. That'd be a great.
That would kind of, I think that would officially even out the bad luck the Vikings have had in the past to, you know, all of this good luck from last week. It's starting to kind of even out, and I think a game-winning touchdown again this week would probably for sure even it out.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out, though, Drew. Thanks for joining the show today. Fans can check out your work at Vikings Territory. I know you mentioned the school scale coming out today, one of my favorite segments of the week. So looking forward to all of that. We'll see how things go, but hopefully we get a chance for the Vikings to take it home, as has been kind of their rallying cry here. But we'll see how it all breaks down.
Thank you very much, Seth, for having me on, and I can't wait till next time. Hopefully we're talking about the Super Bowl.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Your home for Redwood Valley Cardinal Athletics all season long. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
Let's take a look at what's on deck here for tonight, starting off in the NBA. Washington at Charlotte tonight at 6 o'clock, New Orleans at Atlanta at 6:30, San Antonio at Brooklyn at 6:30, Detroit at Toronto at 6:30, Golden State at Chicago at 7, the New York Knicks at Memphis at 7, Miami at Milwaukee at 7 o'clock, the Los Angeles Lakers at Oklahoma City at 7 o'clock, Utah at Sacramento at 9 o'clock, Denver's at the LA Clippers at 9:30 tonight. Over to Big Ten men's basketball. Iowa at Rutgers at 6 o'clock tonight. Number 22 Ohio State at Northwestern. That's at 8 o'clock tonight. And to the NHL games for tonight. Montreal at Boston at 7:30 Eastern. Pittsburgh at Anaheim at 10 o'clock Eastern. That is a look at what's on deck for tonight. It is time for us to wrap it up for today. That does it for today's edition of The Scoop. A big thank you to Drew Mahold and also to John Folkey for joining the show today. Plenty more Vikings discussion coming up on the show tomorrow. We'll be joined by another member of Vikings Territory, Austin Belisle. And we'll also get a little Philadelphia Eagles perspective coming to the show as well. So all of that coming up tomorrow. Have a great afternoon. We'll be back at 3:05 tomorrow.